Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time.
Okay, my guest on the pod today, she's an awarded marketing leader. She's been featured in Ad Age 40 Under 40, and she's currently the Enterprise Chief Marketing Officer at American Family Insurance. But more importantly, she's a change maker focused on making a difference through her support of the next generation of leaders. So with that, I'd like to welcome Alicia Azali to the show.
Hey, Matt. It's been a long time. Excited to be with you this afternoon.
So I appreciate you taking the time to join me today. Before we get into your career journey and many of the efforts that you're leading, I'd love it if you could just share a little bit of a story about what a little Alicia was like.
Sure. I actually love telling the story of where and how I grew up, because it's a story about possibilities. And when I look back, it is a source of pride for me. I grew up in a town of 9,000 people in Northeast Ohio. The name of that town is Oberlin, Ohio. And the most significant thing about Oberlin is the college that's there. And Oberlin College was the first college in America to accept African Americans and women. And so that sort of grounds and roots the little town of Oberlin, Ohio, to be one that's very open and accept, quite progressive, quite liberal, especially for being a small town. And growing up there, you know, it was not uncommon to see, even back in the 80s and 90s, interracial relationships, you know, gay couples, you know, marches and protests against things that were going on. And growing up in that culture where really diversity was celebrated, it was very sort of uplifting for me looking back. And I remember moving from Oberlin College to a very traditional suburban town called Worthington, Ohio. And I remember in kindergarten is when my sister was called the N-word at school.
Wow.
And I remember that because it was such a stark difference between that little town that I grew up with. And I remember needing to pour into her and having the language to do so because of this, you know, very diverse town that I grew up in and the focus on diversity and inclusion. And so that's really one of the first times that I was not only faced with racism, but also able to tap into a belief that's been with me since day one and really connects back to that small town experience that I had growing up.
So it's interesting you mentioned kind of pulling from that small town experiences, because I think typically most would presume that small towns aren't diverse and that they don't have that perspective to pull from. But it sounds like that your experience allowed you to go to a different environment and to have that strength to pull from, which is really powerful.
I would say it's powerful and it's special. And I'm very fortunate to have had that experience, because I think it grounds me and it roots me in what's, you know, my values and my principles, but also gave me the language to, you know, in my chair today, that language is not new. You know, mm-hmm. that priority and focus on diversity is not new. It's literally been since day one of my upbringing.
So I do want to dive into a bunch of stuff about you, but I have to stop on that story you shared about your sister, because I think it's something that many of us have experienced either firsthand or through our families. I'm just curious, how did you and your family handle that? Because I think there's maybe people listening that haven't been exposed to it. They may not be their lived experience. I'd love if you could like bring into how that impacted a kindergartner to actually have to experience that firsthand.
If my sister was with us on this call today, Matt, she would tell this story because it stayed with her. She's a grown woman. And so the first thing is we can never underestimate the impact that these type of experiences have on us, even from such a young age. So beyond, you know, making sure we recognize that these experiences stay with us, it's important to how you respond to them. And I applaud my mom. We were, you know, she did her best as a single mom. She had us in this, you know, private school, thinking that she was, you know, moving us from this small town. She wanted to make sure she sort of curated that experience for us. She changed schools. She put us in a different environment. because if we're going to school and not feeling confident and being brought down, it doesn't matter how good the education is. If you're not feeling good about yourself, then it's almost a waste of time, right? And yeah. So I, again, looking back, I can only imagine, you know, now having four kids of my own, how difficult of a decision that was. But yeah, she switched schools.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that you talk about trajectories and staying with you. I know that that was probably jarring at the time to have to then go and switch schools. I know that it was probably, you know, there may be a missed short-term opportunities, but hopefully it showed her and it showed you and it showed your mom that you can come through those things even stronger.
That's right. And you have a choice, right? You know, it's not a push through it kind of moment. It's like, no, you deserve better moment.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So when you were growing up, did you know you were going to be this big, bad marketing boss? Was that the plan, or do you have something else that you thought you were going to grow up to be?
So my aspirations as a kid, and I can't make this up, were a fly girl. living color. I remember sitting around the television and watching Paula, and not Paula, it was J-Lo.
Yeah.
And thinking, I can do that. That, I mean, they just seemed like they really had mastered femininity and but sass and, you know, commanded attention. And so I was like, I could be a fly girl. Okay. That didn't work out. But that was my career aspiration growing up. Seriously.
Wow. Wow. So I do want to jump into your professional journey. So similar to me, you got your start at P&G. And I like to think about P&G as kind of, it's definitely great for grounding you in not only starting your career, but business, marketing, many other strong skill sets that are applicable across a wide spectrum. But how do you think it set you up for success? And like, what did you take away from those, you know, fun years in the natty?
So before I jump into the P&G years, I have to acknowledge this chapter before P&G, because there were so many people, Matt, that poured into me to help transform that, you know, small town girl from a marketing major at the Ohio State University. Yes, we have to do that. It's a part of, the graduate diploma is you have to say the. And I like to give power to their names in mm-hmm. when I tell this story, because they, you know, really help leave an imprint, a lasting imprint on my life. And so one of the things that was transformative for me was interning in a Black-owned urban development firm through high school and half of my undergraduate degree. And there was a guy there named Adam Troy, mm-hmm. one of my mentors. It was his company. And he really taught me how to show up in a corporate space. And again, if you don't have somebody in your network or your family who's showing you how to show up in a corporate space, it's a whole thing. There is a culture to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had politicians and business people and executives coming through his doors. And again, he, you know, watching that happen, watching the swag and the confidence that he carried and how he moved in the office was transformative for me. So I love to bring him up in these moments. Another person is named, her name is Mary Tucker. And she worked in Adam's office. And one day she took me to Longhorn Steakhouse. I'll never forget, because I was an undergraduate and I didn't have any money. And she was like, I'm going to take you to a steakhouse. And I said, fantastic, Mary, I'm going to eat. So she took me out and she opened up a Black Enterprise magazine. And during dinner, she asked me to look through in this particular, you know, episode of the, you know, chapter of the magazine was featuring successful Black women. Mm-hmm. And she said, what do these women have in common? So I started looking at their titles and their profiles. And it was a marketing executive and an advertising executive and a media executive and maybe some legal and finance. But the predominant profession of these Black women were media, advertising, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and she said, these women have paved the way for you to bring your full creative self to this space. And the next day, Matt, I went back to my guidance counselor's office and I changed my major. Wow. And within a week, I had received an email about a camp at Procter & Gamble.
Wow.
And so I went and I participated in the camp, which culminated in the opportunity to interview for an internship. I did that and had a successful 6-year career at P&G in brand management. The third name I like to mention is Tavis Smiley. So if you might remember Tavis Smiley from back in the day, he was a huge sort of political thought leader among African Americans. And at the time, he had this program where he would travel to different major cities and pull together talented young African Americans. And that sort of culminated in this National Youth Convention in Washington, D.C. I was fortunate enough to not only participate in one of the cities, but then help define and roll out this national program alongside 20 other youth leaders. And I still keep in touch with many of those individuals. And it was really an eye-opening experience that there are other young people out here doing their thing that look like me, that come from places that, you know, it's not often where you see people pushing what's possible and opening their mind and being, you know, pushing boundaries. And so Tavis Smiley's program, again, for me, was transformative in, again, connecting with like-minded individuals, kind of networking peer-to-peer, and also just thinking about what's possible. And so I'm certainly grateful for those experiences before Procter & Gamble.
So I want to thank you for going back. And I actually got chills when you were talking, because I inadvertently made the mistake that a lot of people make by saying you got your start at P&G, because you started way before that. And what really moved me and what you were saying is this idea of you can't be what you can't see. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you had those individuals that through different ways, different opportunities, they expose you to things that you hadn't seen, which set you up so that when you did have your chance, you would be successful and you'd be able to pull from that. So it wasn't just that you had people rooting for you, but you had people actually giving you the tools you would need as you moved into that space. So again, thank you for taking it back, because that was definitely looking at the LinkedIn and you know, you assume certain things that you just showed up day one, you know, at P&G and you just were ready to go.
Right.
As opposed to the energy that was poured into you before that by great individuals.
Right. I love the way you phrase that. You know, half jokingly tell people I've been grinding my whole life in the good words of Nipsey. Like this is not day one. Yep. This is not an overnight success story. You know, this is literally, you know, since some of my earliest memories have been rooted in using my voice around the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion. They've been, you know, trying to do what I can for impact, but P&G is certainly not day one. That being said, P&G is another transformative chapter in my journey. You know this. It day one, you get exposure and access and accountability for, you know, business impact that most people don't have until they've been doing this for 20 years. And so to think that right out of college, again, you know this, you're getting to make decisions on, you know, multi-million dollar advertising campaigns, what the packaging looks like. You're flying across the country doing consumer research to, again, just another transformative opportunity. And frankly, I've made some of my closest friends, you know, during that chapter in my life. And fun fact for the audience, Matt Story is the best chicken head dancer in all of Cincinnati. You might not know this, but if you see Matt on the street, ask him to do the chicken head dance, and you will be floored.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that memory back, because I'm sure that I buried that somewhere very, very far away. It's funny. I was having Ryan Robertson was on the podcast, and he didn't let me get by calling it the Natty. He referred to it as the Nasty Natty. Mm-hmm. And proceeded to remind me of a number of our time enjoying the services and places of Cincinnati in those years. So I'm going to pivot us a little bit from just the career trajectory, because there was something I think you hit on in all of those stories so far around your identity. And just in hearing you kind of walk through it, it sounds like you were able to form who you were, which allowed you to show up and be successful. So I'm curious, as you had those experiences, whether it was like literally the earliest experience you could have growing up in that small town, going to university, getting someone pouring into you, kind of the exposure of how to operate in those spaces, also to know the fields to be in, how were you forming the identity of who you were as a person that allowed you to be successful? And like, did that change? Did it morph? Did it modify as you went on to do many great things?
I you know, love to kind of think about this in form of a story. And I remember a time when I was an associate vice president at Nationwide, which means I was like a baby executive. So AVP, baby executive. There were at least three other more senior African American women at the company at the time. Wow. And, you know, when I think about their walk and how they had to move in corporate America, it's very different than you and I. Mm-hmm. You know, these women had to sort of suppress their femininity in many times. They had to dress, you know, it's a financial services company. They had to dress more masculine. They're wearing blue suits. You know, their hair is pulled back. And so, again, they really had to make their true identity a bit smaller to be successful. And I thank them for that, right? Like, they literally paved the way so that, you know, I and many others could come behind them. But I remember a time when I was sitting in my office and a younger employee came in, and one of these older women, more senior women, had told her to stop wearing her braids at work and to maybe think about putting on more conservative wear. And she wanted my point of view on that. And I remember thinking, like, okay, the technical right answer is what these senior women have already told her, right? Because they're, I remember I'm a baby executive, and they're, she's getting counseled from the most senior women in the company to do something. But something brought her to my office to ask, what did I think about her changing the way she showed up? And so I remember sitting back and thinking, I have a choice to honor who came before me or to sort of put a next chapter in that story and say no. And so I said, no, you wear your hair how you wear your hair, because I think your braids are professional. And I think the flower print dress that you have on is beautiful, and you also do really good work. And so it actually doesn't matter how you show up. And I remember that was one time where, you know, I felt comfortable enough in that corporate space to say, no, like, this is what I believe is right. And still honor those who came before me around, you know, what it means to walk in these spaces as an African American woman, but do so in a way that felt true and natural to me, and that I didn't have to betray myself or what I thought was valuable so that I could create space for this more junior employee at the company.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things in that I want to pull on. One, I think having the good fortune of having senior executives that you could go to that understand your lived experience, because a lot of times there's many people that don't have that. And so they are flying in, you know, proverbial blind, and they don't have the opportunity to have someone guide where they're going. And so I think that is very important. But then you do hit on something in terms of like those shifts and those pivots where we're able to benefit from the elders and those that have come before us and have done it, you know, breaking through the ceilings and the walls and the doors that weren't open. But then in order to go to that next level and to get to where we need to get to, we have to change. And like, you having that confidence to instill that into someone else that was coming up is, again, the word I go back to is powerful. And you pulling from something inside of you that knew that was the right time to do it, because I would venture a guess 5 years, 7 years before that, it probably would have been a different answer.
Absolutely not. And for me, I remember in my early years, especially at P&G, thinking success was mastering how I saw it done. Mm-hmm. So mastering the language and the hallway chatter and just observing how people moved. And a few years into it, you realize how much you are leaving yourself at the door when you do that. And that's exhausting, Matt. It feels, again, like you're betraying who you are and what got you there in the first place. And so recognizing what made me stick out at times, what made me unique, what made me, you know, different and sometimes feel a bit insecure were the actual things that made me powerful. leaning into my, you know, femininity, leading into being the youngest person in the room, leading into being, you know, this, you know, multicultural person with the unique experience. Those are the things that, you know, that team needed from me. And every time I chose to minimize those things, I was only doing the room a disservice.
Yeah. Yeah. Spot on. I can't say it better. So you eventually became a not baby exec, and you hit the C-suite, and you actually held the role of chief revenue officer at the General. So what was that transition like? And you already started to talk about this and being the youngest in the room, maybe not looking like the others in the room. But what was that transition like for you to move into that big exec seat and out of the behind the scenes, if you will?
Again, thinking back to P&G and the experiences that you earn and you have at Procter & Gamble, leaning into that role of chief revenue officer really was just tapping back into things that, you know, I learned from the ground up. And so kind of to our earlier conversation, we just don't arrive in these rooms. It's you know, preparation over time. And it certainly required a good deal of trust in myself, you know, because, you know, no one's going to veto your judgment, you know, and if you do, the stakes are a bit higher. And so that role in particular, I would say my confidence grew in my ability to make decisions really fast, because it's make or break when you're the one where, you know, where it all kind of lands to. So, you know, that was really a culmination of a lot of years of trying things out, mm-hmm. kind of building what my gut and my intuition around what works and what didn't work, and putting it into play. And so that role in particular is pretty pivotal, because I remember going into feeling like, okay, I can do this. I'm a little nervous, but I think I can. And so 18 months later, feeling like, okay, I'm ready.
I got this.
Yeah. I got this. Yeah. Yeah.
So many people, you know, whether it's because of the pandemic and reassessing where they are in their careers, or, you know, it could be that time of year where you're having, you know, mid-year check-ins or what have you, are looking at their career trajectory and they're thinking about where do they want to go. And I would venture a guess a few folks listening may want to ultimately be a CMO, and they may ultimately want to head up a marketing organization. So what would you share about sitting in that seat that someone should think about that is striving to get there? Or, you know, are there any lessons that you've picked up along the way, in addition to what you've already shared, that you would specifically around being a CMO?
Sure. And so my counsel has always been, aspire to the experience and not the title. So get really clear on what are the types of experiences or skills that you want and need to develop, and add value when you know, in any job, even if it's a role you hate, add value, because that's going to create the space so that when something else comes up, it's an easy decision to say, okay, this person's adding value. So for me, how do I add value, but also add the breadth of experiences in every sort of step along the way? That's been allowed me to get really focused on, okay, so if the CMO role is a thing that, you know, our listeners are aspiring to, step back and look at what experiences or skills are required to do that job, and then focus on curating, you know, those type of opportunities. And sometimes you have to look outside of the four walls of the company that you're with to get those things. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have to get on the board of a nonprofit to demonstrate and build that internal confidence that, yeah, my voice at this table matters. I can structure, you know, a presentation in a way that's moving and influential. And so, you know, focus on those experiences and also be open enough to saying that if you can't get them in where you show up for your, you know, whatever hours of work a week, you owe it to yourself to go find another place to fill in that experience gap that you're looking for to get to where you're trying to go.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And you know, one of the things I think people tend to think is that somebody's going to put a job in front of you that is your dream job, as opposed to actually, how do I collect these experiences such that my dream job becomes available because of the experiences I've collected? And those experiences, I agree, they're not just in a corporate setting. I was actually having a conversation with someone that joined the PTA to be able to get practice at communication skills. And if you think about it, it's we're all in the business of getting reps. And the more reps you get, the better you are at the skills. And those reps can come in any form or fashion. So I think that's great. I do want to switch to the personal side a bit. We're going to get into your personal brand. But I want to start by asking, what would you say is your superpower?
Superpower, you know, honestly, I believe it's thinking of not allowing myself to have limitations. I am a what's possible person. There is not a problem you'll put in front of me that I will be overwhelmed by. Not for long, at least.
Mm-hmm. That opens up anything. when you approach everything from a limitless, there's no constraints on it. That definitely opens up the opportunities. So you mentioned earlier having four kids. Obviously, you have an amazing husband. How has wifehood and motherhood influenced and impacted your journey?
So I do have four young men in my house and have been married for a long time. It'll be 17 years this year. And so, you know, my professional journey has nearly always been alongside my husband, who I'm very grateful for and certainly has particularly enabled, you know, he's been all in with raising our family since day one. There's never been a moment where he hasn't been present. And so that's certainly made a tremendous difference in how I've been able to show up and move. Motherhood changes a lot of things. And I have four kids, three of whom were born within 3 years of each other. And so as a woman, there's a unique experience that you carry when you're, you know, creating, birthing, nursing, nurturing an infant. And to, you know, I did that back to back to back. And, you know, and so that's why when you ask me about my superpower, like, I know that I can do some things, because that in and of itself, the traveling for work, the, you know, pumping from a airport, hotel, bathroom, wherever, so that I can still be the type of mother that I thought was important to be. You know, you learn to really believe in yourself and very quickly say, like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And there are moments where it gets hard, but motherhood certainly transforms how you view priorities. Mm-hmm. I think I show up with a clear understanding of what's important to me. And I'm able to leave the happy hour early. I'm able to say no to the golf because I'm going to go to the baseball game. Mm-hmm. And that ability to sort of relentlessly prioritize my time and know where those moments matter and be there, that to me is, you know, kind of the only way to make the life work. Being able to say no, and then when you're in it and you're present, you have to be all in.
Yeah. No, it's really impressive, because I think a lot of times we get into this, what I'd say is a fallacy about work-life balance. Like there is no such thing. Like you don't turn off one to do the other and vice versa. So, you know, knowing that you have four young men that you're raising, and knowing that you've been able to have this amazing career, how have you approached that maybe from a tools perspective? Like, what are the tools that you've used to ensure that you're in the right place where you need to be at the right times?
Tools, I'm going to start with wine is a strong tool. Because there are moments where you're like, you know, Wusa. Yep. Yep. And Pinot Noir goes a long way, champagne as well. You know, to your point around balance, like, life is fluid. There are moments when I am at work on a call texting the teacher, and there are moments at the sideline of a baseball game where I am taking a call. Mm-hmm. And for me, that fluidity and being open and not, you know, kind of critical of myself that, like, life is fluid, just giving me permission to show up that way. A lot of times we, you know, myself and many other parents, working parents, carry a lot of guilt. Mm-hmm. And that constant buzz of guilt in the back of our minds is a lot of times what will take you out. Mm-hmm. And so I've, over the past few years, have tried to let that go. I've accepted that I'm not going to be perfect. And so I would say letting go of the guilt is actually one of the biggest tools, because it's that mental burden on top of all the other demands that has the, you know, ability to make or break you in those situations.
Yeah, it's funny because we, you know, whether it's from our parents, whether it's from our peers, our colleagues, we set up these expectations that can sometimes be beyond what's possible. And we feel like if we don't hit those expectations that we're falling short. But what we don't realize, and again, I think the last 2 years have shown us, because we're all sitting at home seeing what life looks like at home, that none of us have it figured out. And like, there's not a manual for how to do the job, how to do parenting, how to do, you know, even with your partner. Like, there's just like, you're just figuring it out. And there's phases to it. There's chapters to it where you have to reprioritize and you have to move things around. But I think giving yourself that permission to be fluid is an unlock, because at that point, then you know that I'm going to have to, you know, move this way a little bit this time, and then we'll move back the other way when things change or the circumstances allow it to do that. So I think that's definitely important. Would you say you've had, and if so, what is it, a Mama We Made It moment?
Oh, let's think. Mama, we made it. Yeah, you know, here's a fun one. I might edit this out later. We'll see. I committed this year to doing one-on-one trips with each of the boys. Big families, it's hard to get one-on-one time. Everything is kind of, you know, herd mentality. We're all going to the game. We're all doing this. And as they're getting older, just being more present for one-on-one time and kind of hearing all their voices. So I started doing that this summer. And I was able to bring my third son, Donovan, on a work trip with me to Palm Springs. And one good luck conversation led to a next. And I was able to bring him with me on the private jet. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on a private jet many times since even my P&G days. But to bring an 8-year-old little boy and have him sit in the cockpit with the pilot, that was pretty special.
That's a great one. That, like, and so I've been noodling this concept of like space and how we operate in space, and how, you know, I come into contact with you and I change your trajectory, and you come into contact with me and you change my trajectory. I could see that moment, the like inflection point of him being old enough to remember it, mm-hmm. but not so set in his way that it's changing his perception of what's possible.
Absolutely.
And you know, because like a lot of us, you know, the first time you go right or left on the plane is usually one of those moments too. And depending on how old you are when that happens, you think about what, to your point, about what's possible. So that's just a great one, because now he knows that is possible.
That's right. That's right. And it is, you know, back to the question around this, you know, the fluidity around being a mom and being an executive. Whenever I get the opportunity to bring them along with me, Matt, I do. Mm-hmm. Probably in your searches, you see them in the videos. You see them. If I'm on stage, they're in the back rooting for me, because if you can't see it, you have no idea that, you know, if, even what's possible. And so like, let's bring it down to earth. You know, these things are not out of your reach. Also, put some respect on my name when I'm making you breakfast. Like, so, you know, make sure that you know.
Yeah. We frequently have that conversation in my house about, you don't realize how much this time I'm spending on this is actually worth. Right. And what someone else values this time at versus
terrible ROI.
Exactly.
Breakfast, but
I should never have to do another dish. So I do want to close out and have a little bit of fun. When they turned your life story into a movie, who would you want to play you on the big screen?
Zendaya, because she's my real life cousin.
Is that real?
No, she's not.
Oh, okay.
I love her. I love her. I think she's bold beyond her years. I think she's, you know, tells stories beautifully in her acting. So yeah, Zendaya.
Wow, that's a good one. I was about to ask, okay, now after the podcast, you have to make a connection so we can get her on the podcast. So I'll be interested to hear what you say about this one. What song would play in the trailer of your movie?
The first thing that came to mind was Mary J. Blige, My Life. And maybe My Life in the Sunshine, the original, because I do want it to be a little more upbeat. But that, that's what came to mind.
That's great. So the reason I do the podcast is because I'm a huge fan of hearing stories. I'm a huge fan of learning from others' unique experiences. But for you, if there were three people that you could sit down with and maybe have a conversation like this over a podcast, or maybe have a conversation over a Pinot Noir, who would be the three people you'd want to hear from? They could be with us. They could have passed.
So I'm going to first just say my mom's name. She's got a tremendous story. And I think in my older years, I'm really starting to appreciate it more and celebrate her more. And just the idea how precious life is. And I just would love to sit down and actually capture her story and more intentionally. I'm going to go Michelle Obama because she's a force. And when you see her move and you read her book, she does this thing where she balances being royalty and also very regular and approachable in like the most beautiful way. And I'm probably going to go Jay-Z last. I just think he's brilliant musically, a big hip hop person. So
yeah, that's a good three. I did do the podcast with my mom, and to your point, it was the intentionality of it was powerful, and the ability to hear things that I don't know that I've asked previously, because we were sitting down in front of them. So I definitely encourage anybody out there to do that with your elders, because, you know, they may be with us for a while, but, you know, the stories may be forgotten or the details may be forgotten. So it is important to capture that, because I definitely want to have that as a timestamp to pass forward to future generations.
I love that.
Is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share beyond chicken head stories? Or anything you want to share or want to ask me?
This has been fantastic. The only question I have for you is maybe who has been your favorite person to interview and why?
Oh, man. You know, that is an unfair question. I would say there's a few that are coming out that I haven't published yet that will be on that list. But I would say there's a couple that stand out. The first one I always have started with my mom. So, you know, sitting with her, asking her to do this, she was initially like, I'm not doing that. And so then I had to like tell, no, you should do this. You should do it. And just to hear her like sit down and do it, it was just phenomenal. There's been a couple others with a few of my like college friends that have just been kind of eye-opening to see, again, the progression. You mentioned being married for 17 years, like, you know, we've been in this game for 25 years. We've known each other. And to see now where my friends are just doing amazing things and achieving amazing things across the board, there's not like, I'm not going to pick one, but just to be able to have a platform to shine a light on them and give them their flowers, like, to me, that's been probably one of the side benefits. And then I think lastly, there was one I had earlier this season with Dr. Sophia George, and she, in my opinion, is a superhero. She's a cancer researcher. Mm-hmm. And currently my mom has cancer. And just hearing how she's approaching it with such an empathetic, but also an inclusive and equitable view to her research, I was just like, why aren't there more people like you? Like, why, right. Like, why aren't more people out there doing it? So those are kind of, for, you know, three that stand out from recent experience. But I'm sure, ask me that in a year, it'll probably be another three or four that I would throw out there. But great, great question. Before I let you go, get back to that beautiful family celebrating the summer, where should I send listeners if they want to connect with you, they want to learn more about your story, they want to follow you?
Listeners can go follow me at Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. Those are probably the best two public places.
Cool. I'll include those links and we'll go from there. Well, again, my friend, I appreciate you for making time. It's been great to catch up and to to hear more about all the great things you've been up to.
Awesome. Well, it's been my pleasure. I'm grateful that you thought of me. And just so you know, I appreciate your admiration for your wife on social media. It's so lovely just to see how you guys support each other from afar. So, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, but I certainly want to recognize how you guys show up together as a unit. It's a beautiful thing to see.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I really enjoyed hearing more on Alicia's story and how she's truly been able to grind and find her way into her own lane and achieve so many amazing accolades along her journey. The three things that I really took away from our conversation, though, are first and foremost, I found myself not recognizing this, but knowing that your day one isn't when you start a new job. It isn't when you start with a new company. It's not even when you start your career, but really your day one starts when your family and your community pour into you and expose you to things that are going to allow you to perform on that day one. And for me, the takeaway for leaders is we need to recognize that, and we need to understand that everyone we come into contact with on our teams, in our organizations, that we all have different starting positions and even starting experiences. And it's not fair to assume that everyone shows up day one at the job or at the new company or even starting out their career with the same experiences. And we need to know that even though they may not have the same experiences, there's value in those things that they bring with them into that quote unquote day one. The second thing is I really enjoyed hearing her talk about her superpower of not limiting herself and not having any limitations on what's possible. And I think for that one, just knowing that many times we put self-imposed obstacles or hurdles or barriers on ourselves that prevent us from reaching our goals and aspirations. And you know, finding out your journey in life is hard enough on its own. And if we're putting our own limitations on it, we're just holding ourselves back and really thinking about what would happen if we removed those limits? How would our thinking evolve? How would it expand? What could be possible, or what's the impact we could deliver if we didn't limit ourselves? And then lastly, there was a number of stories where she talked about how both for her, but also how she's pouring into the next generation and really helping them see what's possible at the stars. So, you know, having that conversation with the younger colleague that was questioning how she should do her hair, what attire she might wear, and Alicia giving her the confidence to know that it's okay for her to show up authentically as herself. And she would, you know, her work product was going to really be what would shine, and she didn't have to worry about some of those things that previous generations had to combat with and had to deal with. And I think that was really inspirational. But what really took the cake for me is hearing her Mama We Made It story, where she took her 8-year-old son on the corporate jet. And I can only imagine how he's going to be able to take that experience and morph it into endless possibilities of how he's going to live out his true dreams and aspirations and the amazing things that he's no doubt going to go out and do. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.